You don't have a Luke Wilson type of hairdo if you're strutty.
No. That would be tough for Luke, man. If Luke ever has to if he comes to a conclusion that that hair is starting to leave, because I can't picture him with anything but long hair. Like, that's
but
all.
He could buy a wig.
He could.
He could have the Agassi wig.
He could have the
Andre Agassi wig.
Because when you have long hair, you don't need surgery. You buy a wig.
All right. Let's bring him in here. Super Bowl winner, our main man, my guy, one half of, I think, the most dominant gambling duo on the planet right now. That would be Team Luke Bryant. Here's Luke Wilson. What's up, Luke?
How are we doing, boys? How's everything going?
We're doing well. Have you thought of that, like future endeavors? If the salad starts to go thin on you, what do you do with that?
You know, that's like one of my biggest fears in life, and it's one of those things where, as a mature adult that I am, I just totally ignore the idea of even thinking about it whenever it comes up. Just bury it deep down, you know?
Yeah, that's...
But would you ever go to a wig store and buy a wig?
No. If I do, I think that would be rock bottom for me in my entire life. I just can't do it.
Well, but would you be a guy, like, say you get the toilet bowl on top, but you've got, the thick sides. You're not going to grow it long down your back and look like, what is it, David Crosby, the singer? Crosby, Stills, and Nash, he had the long, but he had the toilet bowl on top.
He did. Like, he loved the beanie. Crosby loved the beanie. Loved it.
That's just... Noodles, that just brought up kind of a bad memory for me. I remember it was probably my second or third year. Still relatively a young guy. And I went in to go get, quote-unquote, a trim. And let's just say after my hair dried, it kind of had that general vibe you were talking about. And I showed up the next day in the locker room, and everyone started calling me Matilda. And after that, I am very rarely do I cut it, and if I do, I've got to make sure that we have a nice good combo, because the ridicule that I took that week was just unparalleled. I don't ever want to go back there.
Luke, let me ask you this, bud. The routine for the Super Bowl. You fly in, you've got a week. How many nights out of... You tell me, how many green lights do you get? And then how many, is it just on lockdown the rest of the time? Or what's the routine for the Super Bowl?
Yeah, so that's kind of a very interesting one, because as NFL players, we don't really know how to handle that. And what I mean by that is we don't do road trips like the NHL. Mm-hmm. If you're on especially the year I play in Detroit, it would be hey, we go in, we're playing Green Bay or Minnesota or Chicago, and it's wake up in Detroit on Saturday and do a bunch of film work at the facility, shower up, get on a plane, get into town late Saturday night, intense bed checks, wake up, and you play at 1. So it's somewhat of a morning routine, You're at the
stadium. Can you go to dinner in Green Bay when you get there?
You can, but again, this is no joke, and this was not just Detroit with Matt Patricia. Pete Carroll, too, our curfews were bang on your door, master key card, come in with a flashlight, and like the room's being investigated. And it was every single team that I played on. And it was strange because, in college it wasn't like that. It was you have bed check, and maybe they check, maybe they don't. But I mean, they had, I kid you not, and this is again pretty standard across the league, no family, no friends on the floor. The stairwells at hotels would be wired with alarms, and we'd have a cop sitting at the elevator. So, to answer your question about the Super Bowl, what gets a little strange about it is usually the beginning of the week, if you get the green light, that's when it is. So, we would fly in on Sunday. Back then, media day was Tuesday. So, how Pete set it up was he had it just like a regular week, and a regular week, Tuesday is off. So I remember in New York, it was kind of like we got in super late on Sunday with the time change. And then Monday night, there might have been a few guys that, got after a little bit. Tuesday was an off day. And then Wednesday, you're kind of back into the regular swing of things.
Yeah, I'm curious, the second time around, the first time you go, are you nervous? The second time you go to a Super Bowl, are you all right, I kind of know the way this works? Or, how's the mentality different from one to the next?
For us, I thought that even though it didn't work out well, I thought our mentality going into the second one was actually much more kind of calm, cool, collected. And just because we had so much experience from the roster the year before, so we kind of knew hey, how the flow of this media day would work, how the flow of, you know, even game day, the long intermission, like this might sound nuts, but we practiced like half jokingly, but half serious, the intermission. I mean, I just call it intermission, halftime. Because generally in like a regular season game, you stroll into that, by the time you get off the field, take your helmet off, maybe get something retaped, go to the bathroom, grab a quick bite of whatever, you know, you normally have at halftime. Coach talks to you, you're right back out. You're in and out 20 minutes. Like, there's not much time to chill. Now, all of a sudden, you double that or whatever it is at the Super Bowl, and it's like, you know, Pete was kind of on it, where it's like, hey, man, like, we don't need to get out of the game. We actually had a full-blown, I mean, it's kind of comical, but we'd have to do, like, a full-blown team stretch in the locker room. So the second one was a lot easier mentally to just, like, prepare for, know what to expect. It was just kind of a shame that we peed down our leg there and didn't get the job done.
Yeah, you were on the goal line. I'm sure, like, that must have... How often does that come up with the news this week, Brady retiring? Like, Brady won that Super Bowl. The Pats won that Super Bowl, but he wasn't on the field for the defining moment of that Super Bowl. So how do you reflect on Brady's, you know, presence in that game?
Well, Hayes, I'm glad you asked me this, because this has been one that's always, like, kind of blew my mind. I was in my second year there, and, you know, still kind of getting a feel for how, like, sports media really works and perception and that sort of thing. And I thought that game was so strange, because you go out there and Tom throws a red zone pick early in the game. You know, he was somewhat, you know, above average for most of the game. Fourth quarter comes, this guy is completely dominant. We were up, I think, 10. He goes two touchdowns, I think, in the fourth quarter. It was, you know, a work of art. And then it's like we get the ball back. I think there's like 2 minutes left, whatever. We go down the field, and we kind of, you know, choke, to say the least.
Were you on the field for the final play, Luke?
I was. So I was on the other side of the field, and it was kind of strange, O-Dog, because I remember going up to the line and being like, all right, well, one, I'm in the huddle, and I'm like, oh, we're not running the ball. That's a little strange. Like, but at that time...
Yeah, really, why didn't, like, you just throw that out there, man, in the huddle, say, like, Russ, why are we doing this?
Honestly, if I was a 10-year guy, maybe I think of it, but that was my first year starting. I'm a second-year player. Like, not the guy. I'm not the guy to open my mouth, you know? Mm-hmm. And we had been there, and I'm sitting there, and I mean, selfishly, as I'm walking up to the goal line, I'm thinking to myself, I'm about to catch a game-winning Super Bowl ball. Let's go. And then, like, that moment dawns on me where I'm like, yo, Luke, like, kind of that inner dialogue. Like, the Patriots play man coverage 99.9% of the time on the goal line here, and I'm on the zone side. So, like, how some of those plays work is there's a man side and a zone side, and I was on the zone side. So I'm like, well, this ain't coming to me. But I had a corner on the back side, and I remember hearing everybody screaming and celebrating, but it wasn't the voices that I, like, recognized. So it took me, like, a good, like, 15 seconds to, like, process that, one, we had just thrown an interception, and two, we had just lost a Super Bowl on some dumbass shit. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that.
It's all good, buddy.
I mean, that's to your core, man. That's yeah, raw that emotion.
There,
like, that, obviously,
yeah. There is nothing wrong with you saying that, other than we might have to beep it at
we'll
some point.
We'll beep it, that's no problem at
but
all.
But that is raw. Man. That is raw emotion, man. Like, that is...
Raw emotion. Raw emotion.
It was terrible. I mean, in the locker room after... But
dude, did guys go up to Pete and just, like, challenge him and say, what the hell's going on here?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That. I'll tell you this. I mean, I'm sure there's worse things on planet Earth, but that locker room after the game might have been the worst atmosphere I'll ever be a part of. I mean, guys were screaming at each other, coaches, just demanding answers. I mean, there's a photo of me out there. I'm like, of course, they come to me, the Canadian guy that'll probably say yes, and they're like, Luke, do you mind doing the post-game interview? And I'm like looking around. I'm like, God, you guys would ask me to do this. There's a photo of me circulating online. I just look dejected. I'm like, I mean, what do you say? And what was strange about the whole thing was just like looking back, and I know this is easy for me to say now, but I felt like that kind of deteriorated. That was like the beginning of the end. Like, if we win that thing, we kind of put all of our differences aside and, you know, maybe make a little run at having somewhat of a dynasty. But instead, it just kind of like poisoned the locker room. We didn't really know, like, what, like, to this day, people are like, what happened? What happened? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I know what happened on the play, but, like, I'm not on the coach's headset. I don't know the dialogue. Like, I don't know why we called pass. I don't know. I wish I could tell you, but I don't.
We talked about it the other day, you know, Diggs getting pissed off and the body language, you know, with Allen and all of that. Like, when you kind of, I think when we had you on, you were like, yeah, you could see it. Was there somebody, like, if you thinking back to that moment, was there somebody that was not involved that legitimately just showered and put their gear on and walked out the door, like, 10 minutes after? Like, because they were so either pissed off or disgusted or couldn't even fathom it. They're like, I got to get the hell out of here before all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, I honestly, Noodles, there was probably about 10 guys. And it was a lot of, like, you know, a combo of prominent guys to role players, but I don't really know how to, like, describe how toxic that whole situation was. I mean, dudes were punching stuff. We were just all kind of at a loss for words. And I mean, there was a financial, like, if you win versus you lose the Super Bowl, there's a big financial difference too.
Sure.
But, like, for me, it was just, like, the idea that everything you, like, hope for and dream of and, like, work so hard for is so close you can taste it, and then all of a sudden it's just like the game's over, you lose. And it was a tremendous play to, like, Malcolm Butler. I give him total props, but the idea that, like, even if we miss a block, we have Marshawn Lynch, who probably still has enough, like, I mean, at the time I thought he was the best back in the NFL, to, like, find a way in. It's tough, and, like, I'm fortunate where I was on the team the year before, and I've got a ring. But, like, a guy that I often think of was another tight end on the team. His name was Tony Moyaki, and Tony had a couple really good years in Kansas City. He's older than me, and he had a brutal knee injury and really had a solid, solid year for us that year. We kind of picked him up, I think, week three or four. And it's like, Tony's a guy with a great NFL career, and that was, like, his shot to get a ring, and we – again, like, I understand Malcolm Butler made a great play, but, like, I will always feel like we kind of blew it. You know, I think that's a fair statement. Obviously, I'm wildly biased, but, like, we lost the game ourselves. That's how I will always feel.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's how the rest of the world kind of felt, too, to be honest. I mean, we're chatting with Luke Wilson, and we're discussing the Super Bowl where Malcolm Butler picks off Russell Wilson on the goal line. That was 8 years ago, Seahawks, Patriots, and one of the many Super Bowls that Brady and Belichick won. And you mentioned you're on the field, you're on the other side of the ball, and you realize that you're facing a zone defense. But even with that being the case, like, where were you in terms of Russell's, like, options? Were you, like, his third read, his fourth read? If the play breaks down in the end zone, are you just, what happens? Like, what's your mentality at that point?
I mean, there could potentially be a scramble, but the way that play is set up, it's basically like a pick play, and it's like a bang-bang, like, sat the ball, get the ball out, almost like Russ is turning two. So there's really not a read, so to speak. I mean, the read is, if it's zone, you're working left side. If it's man, you're throwing to it. In that case, it was Ricardo Lockett, and the ball's got to come out quick. What was kind of tough about the whole thing was that Brandon Browner, who was on our team the year before as a cornerback and who has notoriously been one of the best jam/press corners in the NFL at that time for a long time, and he was a very big body for a cornerback, was on our number two receiver. So the guy who was supposed to set the pick or the rub, if you will, on Malcolm Butler gets jammed at the line, and it's not his – you know, he can't really work a release. Like, he's facing a guy who does this, like, better than anyone. So, again, that's another one that just kind of 8 years, 9 years later, whatever it is now, you just kind of scratch your head, like, what were we thinking? But it is what it is. And Hayes, one of the things I found funny was, as I always wondered this, and maybe you guys can answer for me, but hypothetically now, let's say we run the ball in and win the Super Bowl. What does the headline read the next day about Tom, you know? And that's why I found it so strange was, yes, I'm not trying to take anything away from Tom. He's the greatest player to play football. He's the greatest player to ever play in the NFL. I mean, seven championships. I'm telling you, I think the guy, there was no one even close to him in my mind. But it was like the next day as I'm flipping through whatever, some of the headlines, it's like Tom Brady's greatness. And he was great in the fourth quarter. I'm not saying that. But if we win that game, do the same writers write about Tom Brady's greatness? You know, that's what I was like. I found it very, very strange, that whole situation, obviously from the play to like the coverage the next day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, because the play, like the deciding factor, he had a cap on sitting on a bench. You know, like it had nothing to do with him, to your point.
Right.
And I would assume what would happen is it would be, wow, Russ was great. Like, that's, you know how it is. Like, 80% of the time, yes, it's going to the quarterback, and then 10% it's going to the coach, and then the other 10%, it's like the rest of the team and their history. Like, that's kind of the way the media reacts, I think, in a Super Bowl situation. But it says something about everyone's career, I guess, and how things can break your way. Like, if Vinatieri misses a kick, you know, if you guys punch that in, like, there are a number of different areas. 28-3, if the Falcons can score in the second half, you know, instead he's got three rings or four instead of seven. And it's, he's still the same player, but probably different vibe, right? Different reputation to an extent.
It is.
It is. And that's the beauty of the big game. So this time next week, buddy, we'll be making picks and picking winners. I mean, let's call it what it is. Team Luke Bryan, that's all we do.
Put the final nail in the coffin. That's what we'll be doing.
That's exactly what we'll be doing.
Go buy a wig. We're out of time.
We'll be talking over the weekend, buddy, making a plan, and we're picking winners next week. We're looking forward to it. Thank you for this.
All right, guys. Talk soon.
There he is, Luke Wilson, one half of Team Luke Bryan, a team that would always run the ball on the goal line. Always.
There is a conspiracy theory I was just made aware of, that they wanted to throw the ball so Rusty the Clown would get the MVP.
Mm-hmm.
There is that theory out there. My buddy that we work with, Chris Edwards, just said possibly that's might have what happened.
Wow.
Can you imagine that? Can you imagine getting to bottom of that and finding out that was the reason?
Well, right.
I would pay a lot of money.
Because the Golden Boy quarterback you wanted to get in the MVP? Oh, my God.
Could you imagine a 30 for 30 on that, and they uncover, like, sound? Uncover the call?
Like
the
a secret
call?
Tape?
Yeah.
It'd be crazy.
Crazy. Yeah.
All right. We got Sam Mitchell coming up. We got Chris Johnston. Dear Hazy B. We're mailing it in on a Friday after Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.